Chapter 6. Chapter Warnings. Discussion of nightmares, canon-appropriate violence, abuse of alcohol, discussion of suicidal tendencies, and survivor guilt. Clint stared blankly up.
You're not my waitress.
That won him a faint smile. No, I am not. May I join you? He swayed in his seat, unsteady and unsure. I've had a lot of... He waved his hands at the empty bottles and glasses that were in front of him, scattered across the battered table. Most of them were empty, but puddles of spilled liquid dotted the wood, pooling in the gashes left from decades of broken glass, knives, and bar fights.
Done some drinking, he admitted. So I gotta ask, are you really here?
Frigga considered that. It would appear so. She gestured at the seat opposite him.
May I join you, Age? No, don't call me that. I got...
He scrambled for his glass, sloshing alcohol over his wrist.
What are... How did...
He tossed back a swallow of alcohol, and that steadied his tongue enough to choke out.
What the hell are you doing here?
She took that as an invitation, and he wasn't sure that it wasn't. She slid into the booth across from him, every movement marked by an effortless sort of grace. The Lady Natasha brought me, she said, gesturing to the room. Clint followed the flicker of her fingers and nearly tipped forward onto the table. Grabbing for the edge, he braced himself long enough to stare out into the dimly lit bar. Natasha was seated at a nearby table, between them and the rest of the room, one booted foot up on a rickety chair, a bottle of clear liquor on the wooden table in front of her. What light there was glinted off the smooth waves of her hair, burnishing it with a golden flame. She didn't bother looking up, and Clint was reduced to glaring at her uncaring profile.
Well, she shouldn't have, Clint muttered.
There was a half-full bottle still there on the table, and he made a grab for it. He missed and had to make another attempt.
You shouldn't be here. It's dangerous.
Frigga glanced around, a faint smile touching her lips. I see, she said, sounding amused. I don't see this danger, but if that is the case, perhaps it best if I stay with you. He glared at her.
Okay, so he chose this particular hole in the wall because people minded their own business, because they were out for a drink or to get drunk, not for a fight or a party.
The booze was plentiful and cheap, and as long as you took a cab, the staff let you drink it however you wanted. Clint tipped well and was polite. They left him the hell alone and kept the bottles coming as long as he kept a seat. He waved a hand, bumping a bottle or two.
Drunks.
Drunken men hold no fear for me, she said, her voice full of humor. I have been in their company for far longer than you could imagine. She leaned forward, and the fabric of her cowl shifted against her face. In the shadows it cast, she smiled. I have one great talent, Clint, and that is for protection magics. No one here will see me or hear me if I do not wish them to.
So, what, they just see me talking to myself? Clint asked. Too tired to care, not really.
Maybe he was talking to himself. That seemed as likely as the fact that he was sitting in a dive bar in New Jersey talking to an ageless Norse goddess. Probably more likely, now that he thought about it. It seems it would not be the first time that a man has talked to the air in this place, Frigga said, nor the first time the air has spoken back. What is one more vision from a bottle on such a night? Clint muttered something into the mouth of his glass. He wasn't sure what he said, or even if they were actual words.
You shouldn't be here, he said, too tired to fight it more than that. It's not a fighting bar, but drunk men turn violent.
She smiled, just a little, a sad little curl of her lips that echoed in the shadows of her eyes. Drunken men can be violent in two different ways, Clint, she said, her fingers closing on the neck of the bottle. Her fingers were slim and graceful, pale as marble and perfectly proportioned. Some men, when drink has hold of them, turn their violence on the world,
on any unlucky enough to be within reach of their fists or their voice. She tipped the mouth of the bottle against the empty glass, smooth and controlled, the two surfaces ghosting against each other. The other is far more dangerous. She pushed the glass in front of him, for he has only one target for his violence and his rage, and that is himself. Frigga poured herself a glass of the liquor, her eyes hidden behind the sweep of her lashes. You, Clint, are very solidly in the latter category. You are not a threat to anyone other than yourself, but you are a very real danger to your own well-being. Clint had to make an effort to get his fingers to stop shaking long enough to grip the glass. Good, he muttered. And the word was too sharp, too percussive. He was trying too hard not to sound drunk, and sounding all the more drunk because of it. Vibrations from the overtight muscles in his hand made the clear liquid tremble in the glass, and he jerked it to his mouth. Maybe I'm the only one who deserves to get beaten up. The thing about violent men and the grip of drink, she said, raising the glass to eye level and staring into it, is that their violence seldom falls on those who deserve it. She took a sip from her glass, her eyelashes sweeping down as her lips parted. Why do you think you deserve it? He choked on a laugh and a mouthful of liquor. Lady, we do not have nearly enough time to cover that question. He took another drink, letting it burn his throat until his eyes stung. What drove you to drink today, then? He paused. His mouth opened and closed on a sigh. With a flick of his wrist, he tossed back the remainder of his drink, tossing the empty glass to the table. The hefty tumbler, used to such rough treatment, rolled on its edge and clattered to the tabletop. None of your fucking business, he said. Or that's what he meant to say. Those were the words in his head, in his throat, on his tongue. Instead, he said, I slept through the night. Her head tipped to the side, the folds of her cloak shifting with the movement. It was pale as starlight and heaped in delicate folds like snowdrifts driven by the wind. His fingers twitched with a desire to touch, to brush calloused fingertips against the fabric, to see if it was as soft and light as it seemed. Instead, he curled his fingers into a fist around his glass. I slept through the night, he repeated, the words bitter and harsh in his mouth. I haven't done that since. He trailed away and ducked his head over his drink. Since before. She didn't have to ask what before meant. She had the same before as he did. Do your dreams trouble you? She asked, rolling her glass between her fingers. He snorted. Don't yours? He couldn't taste the alcohol anymore. His tongue was numb to it, his head awash in sensation to the point where it was indistinguishable from numbness. I dream of a world made cold and empty, she said, her voice soft, undercut by the click of the glass against the table. I dream of the nothing that follows war, but for the cry of the ravens on the wing. I dream of eternal winter, a cold so deep it would freeze the very blood in my veins, with no spring to hear the weight of my hopes. I dream of an unending day with no sun. I dream of a cold so consuming that it will take all of us. A cold so horrible that even a frost giant would freeze. She met his eyes, her fingers cradling her glass, holding on to it as if that were all she had left to hold on to. I dream of death. I dream of the death of my sons, my husband, my people, of my world and every other we know. I dream of being the only one left alive, the only one left to mourn in a dark, frozen world that even death has forgotten. A tear slid down the curve of her cheek. I dream of you. Clint's hand was shaking as he raised the glass to his mouth. I dream of the dead, he said, his voice flat. All of them. I dream of the ones who died. The wash of liquor burned its way across the plane of his tongue, down his throat. He swallowed without tasting it and was glad. The ones I killed. He set the empty glass down and it rattled in a circle before it settled. Frigga took it without him saying a word. She poured from the bottle, and there was a grace to her movements. More grace than that rotgut deserved. Clint watched her hands, watched the slim, pale digits and the perfect ovals of her nails. The glass glowed under the dim lights as he reached for it. Many warriors have been haunted by the ghosts of those who have fallen in battle. She filled her glass as well and took a long swallow of it. Those on their own side, as well as those they have defeated.
The ones they killed, you mean?
Clint reached for a bottle. It was mostly empty, just an inch or two of alcohol coating the bottom, but he raised it to his lips anyway.
They're victims.
Is that what fills your dreams? Those who opposed you? Clint stared into the depths of his drink, at the gathering shadows in the hollow of the bottle.
I see them all. My people, civilians, friends, strangers, aliens, humans.
He forced his eyes closed, forced them shut, and the memories were there, burned into the darkness behind the lids.
As long as they're dead, that's what ties them together. That they're dead. That I killed them.
They haunt you, Frigga said, and it wasn't a question, but he answered it anyway.
Yeah, but not in the way you'd think.
He stared at nothing, trying not to see, his eyes failing him even now. Even now, they failed him.
They don't blame me.
Frigga glanced up, her eyes sharp. Do they not?
The laugh that came out of him was ugly and harsh. They just...
The bottle clattered against the table. They keep saying it wasn't my fault, that I didn't do anything wrong, that I'm not to blame. He scrubbed his hands through his hair, his nails digging into his scalp, the heels of his palms squeezed tight against his ears, trying not to hear his own words.
They're there, all of them. All of them saying things, lying. All of them lying.
His hands scraped against his skin, his fingers spreading out over his face, clawing at his eyes.
I'm so sick of the fucking lies, he spat out, and it sounded like a sob to his own ears.
He wished desperately that he could cry, but it was with dry eyes that he looked up to meet her clear gaze.
I slept through the night, he said, exhausted, and now I'm afraid to go back to sleep, because I'm afraid it's going to happen again.
Afraid, so desperately afraid, that even this one comfort, the comfort of the weight of their deaths, had deserted him, leaving him so alone that he couldn't even begin to face it. Frigga's eyelashes dipped, and her head dipped with it. She took a deep breath, her shoulders rising with it, and when she straightened up, there was steel in her spine, in her gaze.
I forgive you, she said.
Clint rocked back against his seat, alcohol and anger making him dizzy.
Fuck you, he said.
She didn't flinch. Instead, she said, calm and simple and firm, I forgive you. Clint struggled to his feet, and he didn't quite make it. He collapsed back into his seat after a moment, his knees like water and his head spinning.
Fuck you, he hissed, and the words had force. What have I done to you to give you any fucking right to forgive me?
Her lips parted, just enough to let the words out, a thin exhale. I forgive you for being the tool with which my child destroyed everything I hold dear.
He could barely breathe, barely see. His stomach roiled, acid biting into his throat with a horrific searing pain, like fear, like vomit. You have no right.
Frigga inclined her head. No, I do not. But you refuse to admit that you bear no blame. To tell you it wasn't your fault. You will not accept that. You will not believe that. I can tell you that you were a pawn, that you had no choice, and you will not listen. You will not believe, because you cannot allow yourself to believe. She sipped her drink, and he could hear his own breath in his ears, hear the blood pounding in his veins. She lowered her glass to the table. You desire not reassurances from the dead, but forgiveness. and they cannot offer it, because you cannot forgive yourself." She took his glass from his hand, and his fingers hung, nerveless and numb, in midair. She held it up. "Loki refuses to acknowledge that he has done anything to require forgiveness," she said, studying the liquid. Her eyes closed. "And you seek forgiveness for sins that are not yours." Clint reached for the bottle. There wasn't much left, so he tossed it back. "Fuck you," he said, the whisper barely audible. She smiled, sad and kind. "I forgive you. Sleep, and find no fear in the dark."
"I'm not afraid of the dark." The bottle rattled against the table as he tried to set it down. "I'm the thing that hides in the dark. I use it. I enjoy it. His face twisted. "I'm the monster that hides in the dark, Frigga, whether I like it or not."
Frigga took the bottle from him, drawing it away from his hand. "Humanity has always feared the dark," she said. "Do you?"
"No."
He paused, the bottle seeming to glow in the dark.
"Darkness is safety, sanctuary. It's a hiding place. It's something I can use, something that allows me to move without being seen, without being caught. I love the darkness. Violence lives in the darkness," he said, bitterness crawling through him. "And so do I."
She sipped her drink. "So many lies you tell yourself," she said, her voice sad. "Violence is done, in the dark and in the light. The sun witnesses just as much cruelty and malice as the moon. But when you move in the darkness, you can use it. You can avoid violence. If you were merely a man of violence, then you would do your deeds beneath the light of midday, where all could see, where you could revel in it. But the shadows, the darkness, allow you to avoid some acts of violence, allow you to do what needs to be done without having to rely upon violence upon every turn." She reached out, her fingers hovering over his cheek, but she didn't touch his skin. "Darkness is rest and protection. It is sleep. It is peace. It is a time to heal and recover and think. It is a time to dream."
"It's a time for nightmares," Clint said.
"Those will come, no matter the time," she said, sounding tired. "Will you not risk the pain, if it means a chance to heal?" Clint let his head fall forward into his hands.
"I want my nightmares back," he said.
"Perhaps," Frigga said, "you will dream tonight. May you be visited by the dreams you deserve, and not the ones you desire." There was a faint touch to the back of his hair, of fingers, or just the air moving the strands. "I wish this for you." There was an almost inaudible rustle, the sound of fabric moving. "I will take my leave of you now, Clint. But know this, you are forgiven. You are absolved. If you seek to punish yourself, you will. But no one will join you in your solitary pursuit. It is a waste of a good life to punish a good man for the sins of another."
"Hey, are you okay?"
Clint's head came up and blinked at the waitress. She was a tired-looking woman with too big hair and too bright makeup, but a sweet smile and kind eyes. She leaned over.
"Hey, are you okay?" she repeated.
"I don't know," Clint said. He blinked.
"I think I'm drunk."
"Honey, you are so amazingly drunk, it's not even funny," she said, her lips quirking up. "You want me to call you a cab?"
"I've got him."
It said something about the staff, or maybe just the size of the tips that Clint left, that the waitress didn't move. She did hug her tray to her chest for a second, falling back in the face of Natasha's basilisk stare. But that was just a sign of self-preservation. Clint admired self-preservation.
"I don't think," she started.
"Don't try to think," Natasha said, and the woman tensed.
"Nah, it's okay," Clint managed. "Nat, you're a bitch."
"So are you, Clint."
The waitress gave Natasha a sideways look.
"You sure?"
she asked Clint.
She's... Clint's lips twitched. She's my partner, he explained.
And my ex.
The waitress nodded, still wary, but relaxing now.
Okay.
And my roommate, Clint said. He rolled his tongue around his mouth. And my guardian angel. Not my lover. Not anymore. We sleep together, though.
That's a lot of things, the waitress said.
She looked at Natasha, her lips twitching.
Sounds like a lot of work.
The pay's good. Natasha handed her a bill that was probably obscenely large. Thanks for not letting him die under the table. The bill disappeared with a flick of the woman's fingers.
Anytime.
As Natasha got hold of one of Clint's arms, pulling him up and out of the booth, she gave him a wave.
Good night, Clint.
Night, Clint said, one arm over Natasha's shoulders, head lolling on his boneless neck. Everything was spinning, his limbs like lead, as he tried to help her drag him to the door. He was pretty sure that he was just making things harder, but Natasha didn't say a word, just let him struggle along, her grip firm. They made it to the car through some miracle, and he didn't know how long it took or how she'd accomplished it. He just slumped there, boneless and broken. Natasha propped him against the car as she got the door open.
Do not throw up in here, she said.
Uh-huh, Clint said, his head rolling back and bouncing off the car roof with a loud thump. Natasha pulled his head back up, her hand firm on the back of his skull.
Do not, she repeated, throw up in my car.
I can hold my booze, Clint told her, wounded.
I don't have to.
His stomach rolled over, and she sighed as she stepped back out of the way. When he was finished throwing up, he struggled back to his feet, and that was nice. She'd positioned him right over a storm drain. No fuss, no mess. Natasha was so smart. He told her so as she dragged him back up, shoved a bottle of water into his hand, and forced him to drink half of it in one go.
I know, she said. Rinse your mouth out. Have you eaten anything today?
He thought about that, and she sighed.
Great. You are a pain in my ass, Barton.
Sorry, he said. A faint sigh ruffled the hair at his temple as she slipped her arms around his waist.
Yeah, I know. Her lips brushed, feather light, against the skin of his forehead. It's okay. I forgive you.
Clint buried his face in her shoulder.
Okay, he said. And she smelled good.
He told her, because that seemed like a nice thing to say. She sighed again.
Better than you, she said, but her voice held affection and tolerance.
Get to the car. It took him 3 tries, and he smacked his head real bad at least once, but he got in the car. Natasha had to put his seatbelt on for him. He wasn't able to get the buckle to work.
Does Thor know? He asked.
What? That his mother has been speaking to you? Natasha shrugged, but said,
I don't think so.
Clint nodded.
Nat, why does she keep talking to me?
There was only silence while Natasha started the car.
I think, she said at last, that you are the only person who can understand her grief.
He didn't know what that meant. Maybe because he was drunk. Or maybe because he just wasn't smart enough. But he nodded anyways.
Drink your water, Natasha said.
Clint drank, glad for a task that he could accomplish.
Barton, let me hear your voice.
Clint's eyes snapped open, his pulse thudding in his throat, his head throbbing. For a moment, he couldn't figure out where he was, what he was doing there. He couldn't see anything. The air was stale as it hissed between his teeth, thick and choking. He scrambled out with one hand, with the one that wasn't pinned under him, and felt something solid, jagged and solid. He closed his eyes.
Huh, he gritted out. Guess I chose right. Hawkeye?
He jerked, but the voice wasn't Phil's. He took a breath,
and another. Haka here. I read you.
His fingers slid out, slowly as he could manage, trying to find the dimensions of this space.
Go ahead.
He heard the exhale across the comm unit.
Good to hear you, Hawkeye.
And that was Captain America's firm, commanding voice. Hold tight. We're on the way.
Fast as we're able, which isn't very fast.
Stark sounded strained.
Thor, grab hold here, and yeah.
There was the sound of something heavy scraping hard against metal or rock or something worse, and Clint's breath seized in his lungs. He braced himself, but nothing came tumbling down.
Could you?
Clint coughed and covered his mouth with his arm, trying to screen for the worst of the dust. He closed his eyes, taking what care he could to protect himself.
Not kill me?
Working on it, Stark said. This would go faster if you didn't have such a list of demands.
It's short, but important,
Clint muttered against his arm, and his skin was damp and cool against his lips. Hold tight, Hawkeye, Natasha said, and he was glad. He was so glad to hear her voice. He'd lost sight of her at the end. They're almost through.
Great. Wonderful. That's just...
Clint gritted his teeth as the stone shifted above him, his breath lodging in his throat. Light exploded, and he flinched. As dirt and shattered chunks of rock came clattering down around him, he blinked hard, trying to clear his vision. The dark shadow leaning into the space solidified into a battered red and gold figure, and Iron Man leaned in.
How bad? He asked.
Clint shook his head, already straightening up.
Not bad, he said,
and now that he could see the blood on his arms and his hands, tiny scrapes and dings. There was blood in his mouth, and his face ached from a split lip and a battered cheek, and there was a throbbing pain in the back of his skull.
Think I just caught my head on a rock. Don't remember.
Iron Man's visor flipped up, and he reached down for Clint, one broad gauntlet catching the light.
We've got medics waiting for you, he said. Don't need it.
We get them? He asked, even as Iron Man's hand closed over his. The armor's grip should have pinched, but it just felt good to have the help. Clint staggered up and out, scrambling over the damaged, twisted rock and metal. He told himself it was under his own power, but it was far more likely that Tony's arm around his waist was what was keeping him moving.
You got them, Tony said. We're clear, Thor.
Clint glanced up, eyes squinting against the light, to find Thor bracing a huge slab of stone. As Tony dragged him out of range, Thor let it fall back down with a grunt, the muscles in his back and shoulders bulging as he slipped away from the weight. Not even breathing hard, he looked at Clint.
You are well? He asked.
Well enough, Clint said, giving him a thumbs up. He kind of ruined the effect by stumbling over an uneven part of the sidewalk.
I'm good, I'm good.
Yeah, Tony said, and he didn't seem convinced. Come on, Shield's got their setup on the edge of the park. Luckily, we kept the damage contained for once.
Anyone hurt? Clint asked, forcing his feet forward. Tony hadn't let go of him, his arm still a steady, comforting support at his waist.
You're the worst, Tony said. Gave us a bad minute or two there. Next time, can you not get crushed by a building?
Clint chuckled. Fuck you, Stark, he said, letting his aching head fall forward, just for a second, just letting it slump on his neck.
I was doing my goddamn job, and then boom, all of a sudden there was a building that was much, much closer to me than it had been 5 seconds earlier. You gotta learn to dodge these things.
You've got to learn to actually take out the attackers before they start taking out buildings, Clint shot back. He reached back with his free hand, his fingers brushing at the crown of his head. He flinched, and his fingertips came back red and tacky with drying blood. Thor pulled his hand away, his grip gentle.
Do not, he said, frowning. It looks to have stopped for now. Best you not reopen it.
Clint shrugged. It's fine, he said. I just need an aspirin and a shower. He glanced between them.
we figure out what the hell those things were?
Richards knows, Tony says. Not that he's sharing. I'll beat it out of him later.
Fucking Richards, Clint mumbled. Oh, I see you know Reed. Wonderful. I was hoping I wasn't going to be alone in that particular joy.
Yeah, Shields dealt with a few of his little miscalculations before, Clint said. How do you know him?
We both went to MIT, Tony said, as if that was the only answer that he needed to give. And maybe it was.
Lucky you, Clint told him, and Tony grinned.
The street was busy, people darting in all directions, and Clint could spot things, chunks of mechanical limbs or bits of bent metal being collected by agents. They swarmed over the scene, and he was glad that they had things under control, that the street had been cleared, the buildings evacuated with speed and efficiency. No one had thought the Avengers would be needed again so quickly. Clint wasn't sure he liked the precedent being set here. When the call had come, he hadn't expected to be included. Rogers didn't explain, didn't discuss. He just hooked a thumb over his shoulder at the jet and told Clint to suit up and ship out. Clint had gone. He wasn't sure why.
He okay? Natasha asked, jogging up. There was a scrape on her cheekbone, and her hair was coated with dust. But she looked fine, other than that.
I'm right here, Clint said. Hello. You can ask me if I'm okay. I'm okay, in case you're curious.
You lie, Natasha said. And she had his bow. He wanted to sob for that, for the simple act of getting his hands on his bow again.
She looked at Stark.
Is he okay?
Seems as rational as he ever is, but he's bleeding from the head, so we're dragging him to the medics.
Won't do any good, Natasha said. He's a pain in the ass, and he's intimidating.
Damn right, Clint muttered. And he wanted to hug his bow. He didn't, but he wanted to.
He needs treatment, Thor said. And they were talking around him, above him, and that was kind of annoying. Kind of. But his head hurt, and he was tired and achy, and he hated being out here. Hated being exposed.
Nat's fingers slid up the nape of his neck, finding the very edge of his hair, her fingertips rubbing there.
Okay, she said, and Clint raised one hand, trying to push her arm away.
Stop it, or I'll give you something to whine about, she told him, making Clint laugh.
Sit well. Clint tensed, any humor in him dying in a heartbeat. Jasper Sitwell was one of those S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that was simultaneously everywhere at once and invisible at the same time. He did his job, and he was damn good at it. But he didn't make a show of it. He didn't call attention to himself. He did what needed doing. He did it fast, and he did it right. He'd been one of Phil's best friends in the ranks of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent Romanoff?
Sitwell was smart. Smart and nobody's fool. His eyes locked on Clint, understanding blooming in their depths immediately. He nodded, a faint frown crossing his face.
This way.
We just need a place to set him down, Natasha was saying, and Clint didn't look up, didn't meet their eyes. Tony didn't seem to notice, just kept dragging him forward. I can get him cleaned up.
Oh, we've got better than that, Sitwell said, sounding inordinately cheerful about it. This way, please.
He led the way across the scene, his steps quick and efficient.
Dr. Banner wanted to help. We've got him set up over there.
He grinned at Clint.
You might not want to treat him the way you do the rest of the medical staff.
Clint didn't react, didn't look in his direction. He walked in silence, leaning on Tony, letting Sitwell lead them along.
Here we go. He's just back there. Agent Barton?
Sitwell paused, only for a second, not giving Clint time to look in his direction.
I'm glad to see you back in the field, Agent.
Clint's head jerked up, and Sitwell smiled at him, warm and real, and then he was striding off through the crowd again.
Hey, hey, don't you touch that. What are you thinking? Get an evidence tech before you lose a hand and your clearance.
Clint watched him go, still,
and Tony jostled him. We okay, Barton?
Clint glanced at him.
Yeah, just get me... I just need a towel or something.
We got you covered. Let's let the good doctor take a look at you.
As they walked up to the SHIELD ambulance, Banner straightened up, his face creasing in a frown. How bad? He asked, moving towards them. There was worry in his face, and he caught Clint's arm. Here, get him settled down. I'll take a look. Clint waved off the words.
It's just a little cut.
Head laceration, possible concussion, Natasha said, as Tony boosted Clint up to sit on the back of the ambulance. Clint, grumbling under his breath, settled down, and Bruce moved up next to him, already reaching for a fresh pair of gloves.
It's just a little cut, Clint said, and no one paid any attention to him.
But Bruce's hands were gentle when they came down on Clint's head, on his shoulders, brushing over the skin and hair, testing for sore spots. Clint gritted his teeth against the pain and concentrated on not swearing. From a distance, he heard Natasha talking to the others, her voice low and careful. When he glanced up again, it was just him and Nat and Bruce. Bruce pushed his head forward with one careful hand. Stop moving, he said, and his voice was chiding. Clint grinned at his own knees, at the battered line of his knuckles on his bow. He flexed his hands to watch the fingers roll over the grip.
I'm fine, he said, and Bruce made a noncommittal sound.
Clint winced as Bruce's fingers cleaned the dirt from the back of his head, the antiseptic stinging on the wound.
Ow!
Is he always this much of a baby? Bruce asked Natasha.
Hey, I'm not.
Usually he's much, much worse, Natasha said, her back braced up against the van's door. He kicked in her general direction and failed to connect. She didn't even bother dodging. That was how pathetic the attempt was. She just looked at him as if he was a rather amusing pet and laughed.
I'm injured here, Clint said, without much heat. Without any heat at all.
Whose fault is that? She said with a sweet smile, and Bruce tried to stifle a chuckle. It was a losing battle.
Never work with your ex, Clint told Bruce.
Don't date your coworkers, Natasha said. I'll keep that in mind. He nudged Clint's head forward again, his hands big and warm and gentle, the touch not foreign or a threat.
Why not? Tony asked, ambling over. It worked out for me.
Once, Natasha said. It worked out once, Stark. All other times, it resulted in a lawsuit.
I have never been sued by an ex-employee who was also an ex-lover, Tony said. Pepper would have killed me.
He made an expansive gesture with one hand. It was holding a hot dog. Where did you get a hot dog? Bruce asked, sounding stymied by that. Tony considered the hot dog, overloaded with onions, relish, and mustard.
Cart, he said, taking a bite.
What? The fight was over, and you stopped for a hot dog? Clint asked. He could feel the laughter bubbling up in his throat and tried to choke it back.
Really? I got you out of the hole first. You could be a little more grateful.
Tony shrugged and took another bite.
No one died. Everyone's accounted for. Go team.
He gave them a fist pump.
I'm hungry. Seemed like a hot dog was in order.
These are most excellent, Thor said from Clint's other side, and Clint ignored Bruce's attempts to keep his head still.
Thor was cradling half a dozen hot dogs in his arm.
I enjoy this post-fight repast.
Where are you getting these? Natasha said, and she was giving them a look. There was a look on her face, but there was amusement in her voice.
Thor grinned at her.
The kind man but yonder has provided them.
Everyone looked in that direction, and the round little man at the hot dog cart gave them a wide smile and a double thumbs up.
Would you care for one?
Thor asked Natasha. She opened her mouth, and Thor held a wrapped hot dog in front of her, grinning. After an instant, she shook her head.
Okay, she said, taking it from him.
Don't bankrupt the poor guy, Bruce said. His fingers pulled back from Clint's head, and Clint kind of missed the warmth. "This isn't bad, Clint. We can get away with a butterfly bandage."
"Great, woots! That calls for a celebratory hot dog."
Clint held out a hand, and Thor, laughing, dropped one into his palm.
"Did you pay for those?" Steve asked, walking up. His cowl was pushed back from his face, and his costume was battered and dusty, but he was giving Tony a look that was half amusement, half consternation.
"Not at all," Tony told him.
In the icy silence that followed, he let out a long-suffering groan.
"I don't carry a wallet in this thing, Cap. You don't carry... You carry your wallet? Tell me you don't carry your wallet."
He smirked at Steve.
"That's so adorable."
"I have enough pockets," Steve pointed out. "Well, my belt has pockets. I figured a money clip might come in handy."
"Really? Tell me you're not serious," Tony said, and his mouth sounded full.
"What is in all those pouches?" Clint asked, unwrapping his hot dog.
"I mean, what else are you carrying around in those things?"
Steve glanced down.
"Stuff," he said.
There was a faint flush to his cheekbones, but he ignored it when Tony burst out laughing.
"Weapons stuff?" Natasha asked, flicking mustard away from the corner of her mouth with her thumb.
"Seems practical."
"A little. I mean, a few."
Tony was still snickering, and Steve gave him a look.
"What's your problem, Stark?"
Tony crumpled up his wrapper. "I am still hungry," he said with a grin. "I'm still hungry, and Captain America is carrying a money clip in his uniform. Dual problem. Multiple problems." He shrugged. "I'm gonna just solve one of those, the only one I have control over, and get myself another hot dog."
"Pay for your food," Steve told him.
"I told you, I don't have my wallet. It's..."
He paused as Natasha reached out and punched at a panel on his side. A thin pocket slid open, and he glanced down.
"That's not a wallet," he said. "That's my black Amex. It's a hot dog vendor. He doesn't have a register."
"He's a hot dog vendor in New York," Natasha said.
"He's got a Square reader. Even the drug dealers take credit cards in this city." "Fine, you..."
"What's a Square reader?"
Steve asked, curious.
"It's..." Tony rolled his eyes with a melodramatic sigh. "Fine, fine. Come on, we'll just go and..." "Get me one with just relish," Clint said. "Bruce?"
Onions and mustard?"
Bruce said, stripping off his medical gloves.
"Two, please?"
"I'm not your waiter, Barton," Tony said, but he stalked across the park, Steve close on his heels.
Steve gave them a smile and a thumbs up. Thor wandered in their wake, having already chowed through his supply and going back for more.
"How's he looking, Doc?" Natasha asked Bruce, who gave her a smile as he wiped his hands down with an alcohol pad.
"He'll live," Bruce said.
"See, told you,"
Clint told Natasha.
"It's a miracle," she deadpanned, and Clint laughed.
"Thanks, Bruce." Bruce gave them both a shy smile, his eyes darting from one to the other.
"Anytime," he said.
He settled down on the truck step beside Clint, Natasha leaning against the door on his other side. Bruce pulled off his glasses and polished the lenses.
"Try not to make it necessary so often, okay?"
"Hey, you could have let the medics deal with me," Clint said, eating the last bite of his hot dog with gusto.
Chewing, he gave Bruce an innocent look. Bruce's lips twitched. "If it was possible for you to hide under a shield van and lick that wound, you never would have let me anywhere near you."
"What the fuck?" Clint said, his mouth gaping open. "Come on, really? Nat, did you hear that?"
"I heard, and I'm shocked," Natasha said. She paused for a moment.
"He figured you out so much faster than the SHIELD medical staff." Clint tried his best to keep his face straight. It was a miserable failure, and he leaned towards her.
"You know, you could be nicer to me."
"It would be a wasted effort," she said, but she was smiling. You much prefer affectionate abuse.
And you prefer to just dish out abuse, Clint said, jerking to the side to avoid the elbow that invariably slashed in the direction of his ribs.
He crashed into Bruce on his other side, and the smile that was on his face didn't feel foreign or odd.
Sorry, Doc, he said, trying for innocence. Her fault.
What? Natasha's eyes narrowed, her lips pursed, and Clint scrambled up, dodging around Bruce to sit on the far side. Don't use him as a human shield, Barton. It's undignified.
So am I, Clint said. And luckily, Bruce was laughing, his face buried in his hands and his cheeks flushed. What the fuck has dignity ever gotten me? Laid once or twice, but other than that...
Bruce was laughing so hard now that he was bent double, and Natasha patted him gently on the back. Just ignore the crazy man, she said, one eyebrow arching. But she gave Clint a smile that was a little too kind, a little too real for his peace of mind, and his eyes slid away from hers. Clint stared across the park, where Steve was listening, his face intent, to what the hot dog vendor was saying. As Thor ate, his eyes sharp, and Tony leaned against the cart, his expression amused, Steve just focused on what the man was showing him, nodding every so often. Clint shook his head.
You know what's weird? Not that Captain America is able to pick up the concept of a credit card swiper that can be attached to a goddamn smartphone, but that he honestly and truly seems interested.
He's smart, Bruce said, leaning back. One booted foot scraped the ground.
I'm less interested in the fact that he wants to learn how a square reader works, Natasha said, sitting down in the back of the ambulance with him.
And more interested in the fact that he seems to be able to get Stark to do things that he has no intention of doing. She paused and slanted a glance in Bruce's direction. No insult intended, but Stark can be... Her voice trailed away.
Impossible, Bruce filled in, his lips quirking.
He pushed a hand through his hair, his dark eyes warm.
I am aware. Hard to miss.
But you're still living with him? Clint asked. Bruce rubbed his jaw with one hand, his fingers always in motion, always looking for a place to settle. Then once they settled, they were always sliding forward, back, around. Like he was learning the shape of the world, or relearning it, based on what passed beneath his fingers.
Yes. What's that like?
Bruce considered. Interesting, he said at last, and Clint grinned at him.
No, really, it's interesting.
How the hell do you put up with him? Clint said. I'd put a fist in his face after about 10 minutes.
That's because he's just like you, and you hate yourself, Natasha said.
I am nothing like him, Clint said. First of all, I'm poor. Second of all, I am not... He waved a hand. Crazy genius, snarky.
He glanced over and found them both staring at him.
Oh, no, no. You two are not allowed to bond. That's a bad idea. That's bad for all of us. Fuck that.
Luckily, we don't need your permission, Natasha said, her voice sweet.
Hey, Doc. When Bruce glanced up at her, she added, Do you know what's going on with him and Fury? He's getting nastier around the director, and I'd kind of like to know why, if it affects the rest of us.
Bruce frowned. I don't know, he said. I'm sorry. I've noticed it too, at the meetings.
It's not just the meetings, Clint said. They've been bitching at each other behind closed doors, haven't they? He asked Natasha, who nodded. He paused. You know anything else about Ross's movements?
He's still making noise, Natasha said, crossing her arms. But he's not making any moves. We think he's trying to gain some support before he tries anything.
Bruce nodded. Tony told me, he said, shifting his weight. I can't say I'm happy, but I'm not surprised. He's very... He sucked in a deep breath. Determined.
He's psychotic, Natasha said flatly. And obsessed.
What are we going to do about it? Clint asked. He ignored Bruce's surprised look. Nat?
Wait and see what he tries to pull, she said. Her eyes flicked towards Bruce. You can leave. But if you stay, I promised you. He waved a hand. You said what you had to say. I won't hold you to it.
She doesn't say anything she doesn't want to say, Clint said. If she said it, she meant it.
Bruce nodded. Okay, he said. And there was a note in his voice, maybe resignation, maybe hope. He boosted himself off the step.
I'm going to go grab a can of soda. You guys, you want something?
Anything with caffeine, Clint said. Natasha echoed the sentiment, and Bruce was off across the park, his hands in his pockets, his shoulders drawn up tight. His head swung around with every step he took, watching, seeing, ducking out of the way of anyone in a uniform.
You going to be okay? Clint asked Natasha.
She shrugged.
Why are you asking me? She asked.
He likes you more than me.
Clint chuckled. I'm likable.
He toed at the ground, wishing his headache would subside.
Nat, when I was down there, I thought I heard Phil.
He felt her eyes on him, and he refused to look in her direction.
I wouldn't blame you, if you had, but...
I didn't. Clint nodded, and she continued. I would have, if I'd had to. God knows we have enough recordings of him. But I didn't.
Clint closed his eyes. Okay, he said. Okay.
He braced his hands on the metal ledge between him.
I just thought...
I know. Her hand came down on his shoulder. Thank you. He glanced up.
For what?
For answering Rogers' call. For coming out. For fighting. She paused. For jumping when that building came down. Something froze in him.
Guess I don't want to die after all, he said at last.
Guess not, she said. She was leaning into his side, and together they watched Steve and Tony argue over a hot dog cart while Thor ate hot dogs, one after another, and Bruce fumbled half a dozen cans of soda in his arms.
That's our team, she said. We're royally fucked, Nat, he said. And she laughed. He laughed too, not because he had to. Because, for the first time in a long time, he felt like it.
I'd like to go back to the paddle ball. I like the paddle ball now. Let's do that.
That ship has sailed, Barton. This is today's activity.
Clint looked up. Really? Really? Today's activity? He asked. What the hell? Do you have a little chart with ways to amuse me? Is this grade school? Kindergarten?
When your hands are occupied, you feel more relaxed. When you're relaxed, you're more likely to speak honestly, she explained. This particular task tests visual acuity, provides a sense of accomplishment, and keeps you out of trouble for an hour or so.
Clint stared at her. I hate you.
Do your jigsaw puzzle, Clint.
He sighed and went back to sorting what seemed like 9,000 bits of cardboard in varying shades of blue. Why exactly did you choose a puzzle of polar bears, ice, and sky? There's two colors here, blue and white. And it's pissing me off.
There's also black, she pointed out.
The noses and the eyes. I hate you, Clint reiterated. He reached for the box.
Speaking of things you profess to hate at every single session, how do you feel about Director Fury this week? She asked.
Next question, Clint said.
How do you feel about Assistant Director Hill?
No, Clint said, reaching for a furry-looking piece.
You already used your free pass, she pointed out.
He wasn't sure why that was a rule, but he went with it anyway. Hill's a company woman, he said, his fingers working on setting the pieces together. She'll do what needs doing, and she'll do it at Fury's direction. We've run into each other a few times. She screwed me over a few times.
You don't seem angry about that, Dr. O'Brien said.
Should I be?
Most people would.
They wouldn't last long at S.H.I.E.L.D. Clint sorted through the pieces, looking for a paw. She's good at her job. She's smart. She's tough. She's a better soldier than I ever was.
Will you be comfortable with her leading the Avengers?
Clint snorted. She can try.
You don't think it'll work?
I don't think anyone can lead the Avengers, he said. Captain America's got that job, and I don't envy him. But no, I don't think that Tony or Bruce would trust her.
You do?
He shrugged. I don't have to trust her. I just have to know how to deal with her.
He set out another half dozen pieces in quick succession.
I don't think everyone can.
Do you like them? Dr. O'Brien asked. Clint frowned.
Who? The Avengers? Sure.
Do you really?
He took a deep breath, frustration bleeding through. I don't have to like them. I don't have to like anyone. I just have to follow orders. I have to show up. I have to do my fucking job. I have to...
He stopped, rotated his shoulders.
You don't have to like your coworkers.
It makes it easier when you're trusting them with your life, Dr. O'Brien said, her writing pausing for a moment so she could reach for a puzzle piece.
Or when you don't have to come when they call.
Clint shrugged.
You did
come when Rogers asked you to.
You mean when he said, let's go? Clint said, rolling his eyes. There wasn't much asking being done.
You went, O'Brien said. Why?
My hair appointment wasn't until 5. I had time, Clint said, his voice caustic. So, any other questions?
I don't know what Thor's or Bruce's birds are, she said.
What makes you think they have one?
Because that's how you're handling this team, she said. How you create distance.
She set her pen down and leaned back in her chair.
What is Bruce's bird?
He stared her down. She didn't blink, didn't flinch. He hated when he felt a sense of respect for this woman. It made it so much harder to tell her to fuck off.
He reached for a piece of sky.
Bruce is a European magpie. She didn't gloat. He appreciated that.
Tell me about magpies.
Oh, come on, Doc. You know magpies. They're common enough.
He spread the pieces out on the table in front of him.
They're corvids, one of the smallest of the corvée family, same as crows and ravens and jays. They're small for that family, but they're smart. Very smart.
All the corvids are, Clint said, his fingers sliding over the edge of the puzzle piece.
So, I mean, I could have gone with any of them.
Ravens are strong and clever. Crows adapt. Jays are fast and aggressive.
But magpies? Magpies are quick and clever. They use tools. They form bonds. They create packs to deal with predators. They're protective, and they change tactics to ward off danger. They mix well with humans, unless they're harassed. Then they become evasive, secretive, cautious. He smiled. There are superstitions about magpies, old ones, that they're ill omens, they bring bad fortune. I guess because they have an eye for the shiny, for the new. They like interesting things. They'll surround themselves with bits of things, anything metallic or shiny, anything that fascinates the bird.
Dr. Banner doesn't seem like the sort to be after valuables.
You've never seen him around Tony's tech, Clint said, grinning. Or shields. He lights up. He gets faster. He gets louder. He likes shiny things, trust me. But really, Bruce is a European magpie because it's one of the few animals, and the only non-mammal in the world, to recognize itself in the mirror. His lips twitched. It's shown proof of self-awareness. That's intelligence on a whole other level, something only a couple of species has ever demonstrated. Bruce knows who he is. He knows what he is. He doesn't flinch from that. He doesn't like it. He doesn't deal with it well sometimes. But he knows. He refuses to lie to himself.
Dr. O'Brien waited for his words to come to a stumbling halt. What truth does he see?
Clint took a deep breath. That he doesn't have to let his circumstances define him. He doesn't have to become a monster. Just because that's how the world sees him, he can still...
He paused, inhaled. Pass me the box. I'm not doing puzzles again.
We can play jacks next time.